Today's Torah portion is Shalach, send thou. And it talks about sending 12 guys out on a little foray of 40 days long. And they stayed in Israel 40 days. We only got to stay 10. Not fair, huh? But they didn't have an air-conditioned bus to go with. And then they had to carry these giant fruits back. We couldn't bring any fruit in because customs wouldn't let us get them through. But these guys got to go out, and 10 of them didn't really have a good trip. Two of them had a great time. We all had a great time, those of us that went. So we have some differences with these 12 guys. The story bears witness to us as a warning throughout our generations, though. We are warned that there will be a heavy price to pay for one of the greatest sins in the eyes of God. What do you think that is? The sin of cowardice, being driven by fear. From the Torah record, we must conclude that even after witnessing earth-shattering, monumental miracles of the most stunning nature, I mean, how much you got to show these people that you're there? Miracles by themselves, guess what? Splitting the Red Sea, no big deal. We see that every day, don't we? Just turn on your TV, you'll see it. Yeah, on the Sci-Fi channel, they do it once a day. They're not convincing enough to change what's in the hearts and minds of the people. Just how many of you see a miracle every day? I do. I see miracles all around us. The world we live in is a miracle. The fact that I'm standing here is a miracle. The fact that many of you are sitting there is a miracle. You don't see miracles because God made them ordinary. He gave people intellect to create things that cause us to have miracles in our lives without even realizing it. You know, things are a lot better now. God brought the children of Israel out of Egypt with a mighty hand, and he did it with overt miracles. He didn't hide the miracles. He showed them the miracles. He brought them to Har Sinai, Mount Sinai, where everyone there heard the voice of God. I mean, all of a sudden, you're standing out in the wilderness, and all of a sudden, this voice speaks to you. Now, are you going to believe that maybe there's something going on that's supernatural? Or are you just going to accept that, you know? Yeah, there was these two guys out on the ice. And they said, let's go ice fishing. And so they started drilling a hole in the ice to get the fish. And all of a sudden, this voice comes out of the sky, out of the clear air, and it says, there are no fish down there. Huh? Okay. Well, they pick up their stuff, and they trudge down the ice a ways, and they set up their tent. What do they also have? Stools and things and camping gear, and they set it all up, and they start to drill for a hole so they can catch some fish, and all of a sudden, this booming voice comes out. There are no fish down there. Did I tell you these guys were from Oklahoma? And they were in Nebraska doing that. And so they say, okay, let's do this one more time. And they go all the way down to as far as they could go. And they sit down and they start drilling a hole. And all of a sudden, this voice, there are no fish under that ice. And they say, well, who are you? This is the arena manager. It was the quest setter, by the way. Yeah, even after hearing the voice, there were still some bad apples among the crowd who brought down ruin and havoc upon everybody. Woe to us that nothing has changed in all these years. A lesson to be learned from this is a frightening one. Fear is a contagious disease. Fear is like a cancer. It is a serious threat to one's spiritual, one's mental, emotional, and physical well-being. The fear that was in the hearts of those 10 cowardly men spread throughout the entire population of Israelites, silencing even those who had felt or spoken otherwise. How many times do we not speak out because we have some fear about the repercussions? Although many might have shared the faith of Yehoshua and Caleb, nonetheless, they were all punished as if they did not. Why? Because they didn't speak out. Here we learn about the concept of what we call collective guilt and punishment that God imposes upon his people. Why, you might ask, if many others shared the faith of Joshua and Caleb, were they not protected and spared as were those two? The answer seems pretty obvious to me. Joshua and Caleb were the only two to speak out against the faithless opinion of the ten. They were the only two willing to stand against the crowd and against public opinion. They were the only two willing to endanger their lives to stand up publicly for what they knew was right and to call on the children of Israel to follow God. That's why Mordecai told Esther, if you don't do it, someone else will. And guess where you're going to be? You're going to be a toast, piece of dust. As for the others who might have shared with Joshua and Caleb their faith in God, they did not, however, share their actions. You could have faith, but if you don't translate it into movement, you're kaputsky. Is that a word? It was due to their lack of action that the other men of faith were punished by dying in the wilderness. Do you want to die in the wilderness? Sharing convictions is a nice thing to do. It's nice to have the same convictions as other people. Yet, unless one shares in the action, A-C-T-I-O-N, and does the right thing, not just talks about it, one shares the fate of those who do nothing. They suffer the same penalty as those who lack faith. For faith without action is not enough. Action are the things that count in God's record book. When he writes down those things for you, what's he writing down? Oh, the guy had lots of faith, but he didn't do nothing. You think he write that? He might. That's not good, though. It's not in the book of life. It's in another book. For faith without action is not enough. No action means no reward. In spite of what one feels or believes in one's heart. You ever watch a TV game show where they have to race to one end of the stage to the other and do certain thing? What if one guy just stands there and says, I can do this, I can beat this guy, and he doesn't do it? Is he going to win? No. The guy that took off is going to win, right? He got into action. What about the guy? I have faith, I can beat this guy. But yet, you know, they said go, and he's still standing there. What does he get besides a boring TV show? Action is so important. Why then, when B'nai Israel wanted to rectify their fear by then challenging the Canaanim and the Amalekites, were they not reinforced and supported by God? We might think that if at first you get it wrong, then do it again and get it right. Do you remember that old saying, if at first you don't succeed, try again? While we might think this concept to be correct, God didn't. Unlike us, God knows the hearts of men and women. God saw that the same fear that had motivated people to recoil from taking the land was also manifesting itself as rebellion against his word. God had already prescribed a remedy for Israel's collective illness of fear. The dreaded cancer was to be removed from the collective consciousness of the nation of Israel with the death of the very men who carried the fear in their hearts. Well, let's get rid of the cancer. Let's kill it off. It was useless to attempt an attack on the Canaanites and the Amalekites, for the true enemy was not them. It was an internal one, a psychological one. Fear without confidence in God. The external enemy was preferable and would be defeated at the appropriate time. The internal enemy of psychological imbalance, the existence of fear and lack of faith, had to be defeated. Only after a victory over this internal enemy could battles be fought and won over the enemies that were in the promised land. B'nai Yisrael were so terrified by the faithless opinion of 10 men that they wanted to appoint a new leader. Let's get rid of this Moses guy. Let's go back to Egypt where they had leeks and onions and liver sandwiches and whatever else they ate there. These people had not forgotten how bitter their lives had been in Egypt. They could imagine how the Egyptians would treat them if they returned. You think they'd be nice to them? Welcome home, slaves. Nonetheless, the terror of moving forward in faith with God so dominated their beings that they were willing to return to the harshest type of existence as slaves rather than to claim freedom by rising up to conquer Eretz Yisrael. That's why it's so hard to get people to come to a dot on Saturdays. The fear of giving up Sundays is so hard. I can't make this change. It's so hard. Fear. Fear of what people around you will say. Fear of what you got to do to your life. You have to change your whole internal clock. Fear of the things. Man, it is tough. I understand it. Believe me. God could only respond in the most necessary and appropriate manner. When he saw that the resolve and the morale of the people had been broken, God decided that it would be easier to tear down and start all over. Let's just get rid of the problem. Were it not for Rabbi Moses, Moshe Rabbeinu, there would be no children of Israel today. Only there would be children of Moshe. He would have had a big family. God wanted to wipe out the cancer of fear by destroying the entire Israelite people except for one guy. Moses, Rabbi Moses, entreated God for mercy, and our ancestors were spared. He'd done this a couple times before. God seems to have this in his mind. Chapter 32 of Exodus, let's get rid of them. They made a golden calf. Yet in spite of the national repentance at that time, the fear still remained in the hearts of men. Indeed, it never left, nor could it leave. God had to exterminate the men of that entire generation, and he had to do it in the wilderness. Couldn't let that cancer touch his new land. That is why the children of Israel remained in the wilderness for 40 years. These former slaves had too much fear in their hearts. They could never understand nor grasp true freedom that God offered. Yohanan, John, writes about it in 1 John 4:18. There is no fear in love. On the contrary, love that has achieved its goal gets rid of fear because fear has to do with punishment. The person who keeps fearing has not been brought to maturity in regard to love. We are motivated to obedience in response to the perfect love of our Father. And obedience is action and courage. Thus, when we respond in love, obedience, and trusting in God, we will find that fear will fade away like a morning mist. When this is done, all that would be left will be the presence of God. If it is this presence, the indwelling Shekinah, that arouses a man and turns him into a champion and into a hero. Such was the case that's recorded in the book of Shoftim, Judges, chapter 6 through 8, of a guy named Gideon. That's what happened. Today, many religious people are frightened by a hostile secular culture into not standing up for Torah values, principles, and beliefs. We don't do it in public. Like our ancestors before us, many of us do not manifest the spirit of a Yehoshua or a Caleb or a Gideon. Until we conquer fear and manifest courage on an individual and collective level as believers in the mighty one who delivers, we will remain in our personal wilderness. We will lose the land of Israel. And losing our individual, psychological, and spiritual resolve until such a point, God forbid, that our faith in God and obedience to the Torah is threatened. Let us learn to overcome mortal fear and to act with courage for the sake of God, as befits a Torah-observant, Elohim-fearing, Messianic, Yisraelite believer. What does it say at the end of Adon Olam? There is no fear. I always heard fear is the absence of faith anyway. The generation of Joshua and Caleb and the men faced danger and weighty demands to achieve the will of God. Not all of us may see our lives in those terms, you know. Yet each generation faces its own promised land. You have your own promised land to work on. Occupied by giants. Are there giants in your promised land you got to get rid of? Are there fortified cities you need to overcome? Don't we have that? Taking the land is not in any generation a piece of cake. You can't just walk in and take the land. If the land, the spiritual and geographical inheritance marked out for you by God is worth taking, guess what it requires? Not fear, but courage. What is courage? It is facing difficulty, opposing circumstances with resolve and the calm readiness to sacrifice, venturing forward to a good greater than oneself. There were two barriers to taking the land. The people were enormous. There were giants representative of our interpersonal relationships. The toughest situations are those involving misunderstandings and conflicts between people. Then we have another problem in our lives. We have walled cities to deal with, representative of the enormous circumstances which seem to us to stand in the way of accomplishing God's will. Some of those walled cities for us are financial needs, language barriers, time-consuming tasks, too busy. Ask yourself, how am I facing my giants and my walled cities? What am I knocking down? When the dismayed men respond, and we cannot attack those people because they're stronger than we are, we should recall the response from 1 John 4:4. Greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. Do you know anybody greater than that? You. It is just the type of courageous statement Joshua and Caleb would have made. And they did not have the indwelling Mashiach like we do. They didn't have Yeshua dwelling in their hearts. They were just a bunch of Jewish guys. One was a Gentile. You couldn't tell me who was the Jew and who was the Gentile, could you? Caleb was the Gentile. Yeah. Therefore, how much more can we, who do have the indwelling Mashiach, declare God's might, drawing courage from that verse? We have Yeshua dwelling in us, embodying us. You need to let him out and run your life. You don't need to run your life no more. Let that fear go. Have the courage to stand up for what you believe. Yeah. You know? Don't let the world tear you down. Amen. Thank you.